Hello there, can you hear me? Cool. My name's Mark, I'm an addict.
Hi,
Mark. I feel, like Shelley was saying too, I feel really nervous and, you know, it's mad how you get fucking... you think I'm going into battle or something, the way I get this nervousness, I'm going to have a fight with you all, but I'm just going to talk for half an hour or 40 minutes about myself. So, and I'm aware also that... what happens with me is I always get this, people come into the meeting and I go, oh, I must share something that he'll like, or I must share something that she'll like, or I must share, it's nuts, you know what I mean? I've just got to be really honest about what's going on. And if there's any newcomers, please keep coming back. And if you don't, whatever I say or whatever Shelley said, if you don't, if you didn't get much from it and you don't get much from what I say, just keep coming to meetings because you'll hear something that, you know, somebody will say sometime which will, you know, and anything that I say is not mine. I've just fucking stole bits from fucking loads of people. It's all, you know, it's stuff that I've heard as I went along, and it's not the message of maybe Narcotics Anonymous. It's my experience, but you know, I've come in here, but I've followed the sort of guidelines of how to stay clean and what to do. I just want to say, because next week will be 11 years clean. It's great, and and it's always this time of year, you know, the Christmas buzz, and you know, I remember my last Christmas using, and what it was like, this was the end of my using. There had been glamorous times in using where I'd been dealing lots and I'd been in India lots and I'd been, you know, I'd done a lot. I only went to countries where I could get the drugs that I needed. I never went to countries that didn't have smack or dope or whatever. Anyway, so my last Christmas, this is where I was 32 years of age or 31 years of age, and I was in Brixton, and... we used to sell travel cards at Brixton Station, and I used to sell the Big Issue, you know, the Big Issue. And anyway, I hung around with a couple of guys. There was about three or four guys, and they were all just, you know, it was fucking nuts. It was bare out. It was just like fighting with each other every day and stealing off each other. And anyway, this day, this Christmas Eve, this one of these guys said, well, tonight we'll all go around, we'll chip in £5. He said to me separately, he says, well, if you give us £5, I'll get £5 off everybody else, and I'll get chicken and all that, and roast beef, and I'll make a really nice meal for Christmas, right? So I gave him the fucking, you know, silly fucking meat. I gave him the £5. Anyway, what happened is he'd said to this art guy, his name is Dave, he says to Dave, oh, you go to your sister's house and get as much vegetables and that from your sister, and we'll meet round at this character's house. So I'm out all day doing the Big Issue, and I've made about £150. I've done really well. I remember coming back and I was working out. You know what it's like, you're using every single penny. I was thinking, okay, that's so many bags of smack. That's so many bags of, that's so many rocks. That's so many cans of Tennent Super. you know, fucking no kebab or no fish and chips or fuck all that. But so gets to this guy's, gets to the house, and the character who's taking the £5 off me, he's in the kitchen, so he can't hear it. And I've turned round to the guy who's this old chap, right? And he's came out with this meal, and it's all is fucking cabbage and mashed potatoes. And I'm looking for the chicken and the stuffing and the sausages and all. And I've said to this guy who's went gratefully to his sister's house and asked for this food, and he doesn't know anything about this £5 thing, I've says, where the fuck's this? This is shite, man. I've paid £5 for this fucking thing. So he's just punched us right in the mouth, right? Because he's thought, and I've went flying across, there's a room. I went flying across the room because he was quite fit. He was a big cunt. And sorry about my language, but anyway, and he's hit us, well, this tape won't be getting sold, I'm sure. But he's hit us, and I've hit this fish tank, and the fish tank smashed, and I've fell down, and the fish are all over the floor, and this girl who's there, she's going, oh, look, we could eat the fish, and, you know, like, fucking, you know. Anyway, it comes out, I remember thinking, oh, fuck them, you know, I've still got my £150, and I've walked out the house, and I'm walking down Brixton, and I'm walking down this sort of alleyway going down, which goes down to the station. And as I'm walking down, I don't know what possessed me, but I took the money out of my pocket and I just started counting. I thought, yeah, I can get this and I can get that. And I'm just counting the money. And from nowhere, from behind me, I couldn't even hear the guy's footprints, right? He sort of came round and he just snatched the fucking money out of my hand. And he legged it, and I could see him running. He was young. He was like maybe 15, 16. I'm a 31-year-old man. I'm like under the influence and all the rest. And I'm running down, and I can't get him. There's no way. And I'm left with like £1.50 and change. And that was my last Christmas using. It was like a complete disaster. Horrible, horrible. And so I came into recovery. And Shelley talked about a lot about this stuff, about with the God thing. And I came into recovery and I had no idea really. And I realized, the more that I've went on in recovery, the more also I realized that what I'm up against is a life-threatening illness. It's not some Mickey Mouse sort of disease. It's fucking life and death stuff. And the longer I've been around too, the more people I've seen going back using again. And also, the more complacent my head gets and says, oh, you're not going to use because you've stayed clean this amount of time. You're not going to, you know. So I know that it's, I know what sort of happens with that. And so what I did was when I was 32, I got into a detox. And then from detox, I went to rehab. And that's when it really began. I started to look at the steps and in this rehab, and I came. Because there's so much stuff that's actually happened. It's fucking mad, you know. Like, there's so much stuff that's happened. To try and compress it all into 40 minutes, but basically, what happened is when I was first in this detox, I went to a convention in April 2007 in the rehab in April 2007. At the convention, there was a guy, there was a couple of things happened. On the Saturday night, there was a girl on the stage, and the girl who was on the stage was sharing about how she came into recovery, and she'd been clean for a couple of years, but she was really frightened to go for a check for the virus to see if she was HIV positive. And she eventually mustered the courage up, and she went along, she had the check, and she was told she was positive, and as she was sharing this, she just broke down and on the stage. She just started crying on the stage. And from behind me, there was a group of guys who one of them shouted up to her on the stage, says, "We love you," like that. And it was really loud, right? Fucking everybody in the hall could hear this, you know, like, "We love you." And just at that moment, the girl carried on doing her share, and I could just feel like, for years, man, I was in a zone where you're like so detached from any emotion. And the next thing I could feel this energy being directed to this girl on the stage, and a loving energy, you know. And this is what I understand about Narcotics Anonymous, is that this is what the program's about. Is about when I come here, I get love from you guys. When I can't love myself, I get love from you, and you love me until I can love myself. If that takes fucking 10 years, that takes 20 years, that's what I feel happens. And I feel when I leave here, why I feel really good is because I connect, my spirit connects with you. Because my ego tries to separate. My ego separates me. When I come into a meeting, my head goes, I'm better than, you're less than, I'm fucking less than, you're better than, and all that shit. But when I connect, when I start getting real, when I start connecting me, my spirit longs for connection. Anyway, this girl, so this energy was being directed at this girl, and it was like a cooker, man. Do you know what I mean? All the rings had been off for years. And all of a sudden, one of these rings went bang, fucking full volume. It was like, you know, blast number 10. and that was like my emotions. I was just like, whoa, and I could just feel this shoo, rush of tears and all that coming up, and empathy, you know, like towards this and unconditional love. And I remember thinking then, I thought, Jesus, man, for years I've been trying to hang around with people. I grew up in Glasgow. I used to always, from day one when I was a kid, in school, it was always been, who's the best fighter? Can I be the best fighter? I want to be the best fighter. I want to hang around with people who are really hard and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden I'm in this convention and I'm feeling this love and I'm feeling these people giving this love and I'm thinking, God, you know, this is where I should be, man. This is where I've been chasing this love and approval and acceptance from all these people who were, there's no way they're capable of giving me that love and approval or acceptance because they never got it. And here I am with a group of people who are really emotional and, you know, and they're giving off this energy. And I felt, and it's like that fucking, it's like that thing that, you know, I had an experience where I thought, I am totally meant to be where I'm meant to be. This is, and I've had lots of these experiences in recovery where I've been in South America, I've been somewhere and I've bumped into somebody in Narcotics Anonymous and I've went to a meeting and it's just, you know, like, anyway, so that was one big thing that really shifted me. And there was a guy, you get so dry with the old... Anyway, there was a guy on the Sunday, right, and he was talking about... and I fucking thought he was brilliant. His name's Melvin, and he's from Harlem. And I later on went to Harlem to his home meeting. I met up with him again years later. Because he had such an impact on me at the time. It was like, I think what happens is, like, at a certain point when I came into recovery, I was so open to hearing, and this character came along at exactly the right time for me to hear this message. And it really, like, it fucking so changed my way of thinking at the time. Before that, I'd been shoplifting. I still couldn't let go of shoplifting. I gave up the drugs, the alcohol. I was in the rehab. I was still shoplifting. Do you know what I mean? Couldn't fucking, you know, had to get a buzz from somewhere. Still shoplifting. 4 months clean. This guy, anyway, he was saying, you know, and he's come out with some of this stuff, like, he says, you know, if you're in Narcotics Anonymous and you've been clean for a couple of years and you're not doing service, you could well be a thief. He was coming out with some really good stuff. It's like, no, this is a program. I've got one sponsor. I've got one program. I've got one woman. I've got one God. It was like really fucking, you know, hardcore East Coast American fucking recovery. And I was like, and it was, anyway, the one thing that sort of resonated with me was he was talking about, and it's really funny, I've just done a step 4 and 5 with my sponsor today. I just finished this 4 and 5 with him. And he said at the time, he says, if you get into a relationship and you've not done a step 4 and 5, you've got 6 people in the relationship. You've got who you think you are, who she thinks you are, and who you actually are. And she's got who she thinks she is, who she actually is, and who you think she is. He says, it's 6 fucking people. The 2 wrong ones will always show up. Anyway, he was fucking brilliant, man. He was a comedian. He was like Richard Pryor, you know, like up there giving it. And anyway, so I came back from there and I got into the steps and I decided to do a step 4 based on the fact, like, I'm a sick puppy as well, as Andy was saying. My thing was that I want to get into a relationship. I want to get this 4 and 5 out of the way. I've got to fucking meet somebody because I'm driven by that. I don't want to be on my own. I can't stand being in my own space. So I went on and I started doing the steps and then I came out of recovery. And what I'd done in my early days, and what I still do, really, that no much has changed as far as... Maybe my meetings are... I don't do as many meetings as I did initially, but my first year, I was doing, like, 2 meetings a day. I was doing, like, a meeting in the afternoon. I was doing a meeting at night time. I'd done lots of service. I started going... after a few years, I started going to conventions. I went to a world convention in 1998 in San Jose, and... And it fucking blew the head off me. I've never stood. There was 18,500 people at this convention. And there was 1,500 newcomers, 1,600 newcomers. And one of the guys who was doing the Saturday night share, he was saying, and it was in an ice hockey, a big fucking ice hockey stadium. And the guy was saying, he says, I was at the first meetings of Haight-Ashbury in 1953. There was six of us in the meeting, and we had a group conscious to see if Narcotics Anonymous would work, if it's viable. And I'm looking out now amongst this crowd of 18,000 people, and can you tell me if it works? Right? This is what he fucking said, man, for a response. And you wanted the fucking roof nearly come off of this thing. It was like everyone was going, yes! And I stood in that circle at the end, and it's like the biggest circle I've ever stood in. And there was something about that just really, really boosted my recovery. Just really like, and I met some people from the States, from New Jersey, and I wound up going to New Jersey and getting some recovery. You know, like, it's funny how you meet people at certain times. Like, I met this guy who died clean, and he was like a real, it sort of fathered me a wee bit, I guess, and the fellowship. And I'd go and see him in New Jersey, I'd go to the New Jersey convention, and all this stuff. And it's like that, you know, the thing about the little boys in the field, isn't it? A little boy's in the field and he's got two dogs. He's got a black dog and a white dog. And he says to his dad, if these dogs were to have a fight, which one would win? And his father says, which one do you feed the most? And it's that thing. What was happening then was I was feeding my recovery all the time. I was giving conventions. I was involved in sponsorship. I was doing lots of stuff. I was doing lots of stuff that would really benefit me and bring me along in recovery. Didn't stay like that, right? Because what started to happen was after about 4 or 5 years, 3 or 4 years, I started getting the defects of character. Started to really surface much more, and I started to get, I've not got enough. I came back to this thing, I've not got enough. I had financial insecurity, I had insecurity full stop. This is the thing about the step 4 and 5. I think the step, and Shelley talked a wee bit about this, and it's really true, what she was saying too, is that I don't think 4 and 5 is painful. I think it can sometimes get such a bad press in the fellowship, 4 and 5, right? But what it's like for me is it's a bit like shining a light in a dark room. It just shows me what's in, because before I start doing the writing, I can't really see what's going on in there. I can't really see. And the 4 and 5 just gives me a torch, really. I can start having a look and see and start seeing what's actually going on with me. And that just brings awareness. And what I find from that stuff is that I am insecure. I am frightened. I've always wanted people to love and approve me. I still, fucking 11 years later, I still seek people's approval. Do you know what I mean? I still, not as much as I did when I first get clean, but it's still there. I still have a disease that tells me on a daily basis I'm a piece of shit. It tells me I'll do lots of things. I'll do amazing things. I'll get certificates and that. I'll get certificates and that. And I'll get the certificate. And I've just passed this exam. And I've really worked like fuck to get this exam. And within a couple of minutes, my head goes, when they could have passed that, really? So do you know what I mean? What I've got, and it is that fucking thing. It's like living with a flatmate who never goes out. He is always fucking there. It's just like boom, 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 boom. You know what I mean? It's just like, what happens is that's why I've got to do the steps. Why it's imperative for me, and especially the longer I stay clean, is that I've got to stay well, because if I don't stay well, and it is back to the dog thing, the black dog and the white dog, it's like, if I don't keep focused, because I know my disease is progressive, regardless of whether I've stopped using or not, I know that in recovery it's progressive, I know that I've got this head that tells me information that's not correct. I am my worst enemy. Do you know, I think because I don't know how to explain it, but I've got really intimate with this disease. I've been around with my addictive self before I came into recovery for years and years. All I've known is that driving addictive self. And then in recovery, I've still got the same driven addictive self, same obsessive compulsive character still there. And if I don't do something to weigh up the balance there, if I don't have some, fuck it, if I don't get tooled up, basically, if I don't get tooled up, right, the whole fucking thing of the steps is about getting tooled up. From step one, powerlessness, the whole process is about empowerment. If I don't have them tools, I am fucked. Because I'm walking around, and I'm in that thing where I think I am fucking God. Nobody can talk to me. And the guy, I remember a guy once sharing about it, he says, you know, I've seen it so many times, people walking right back through the steps. So walking the steps and then walking right back through and saying, like, okay, I don't need to give MD, I don't need to take more inventory, I don't need to make any amends. I've not got any defects. They're the ones with the fucking defects. You know, and let's take everybody else's inventory. Instead, I'm not going to look at myself, look at everybody else, and then eventually to, okay, I'm just going to run on self-will, and then I'm no longer powerless. And so I think the whole thing is that around that time, what I had to do was I started getting really greedy, and I started doing stuff in recovery. And I say I wasn't even in recovery; I was clean. There's a big difference between working a program and I was coming to meetings and I was doing all the stuff. I was still doing stuff. I was still doing my prison service. I was doing I was the fucking hell. At that time, I was the H&I. If they'd found out, man, they would have sacked me. I was the fucking UK H&I chair, right? And I was up to all this skullduggery at the same time. Couldn't stop. Because what had happened was I'd wound up, started doing this. It was fraud, right? I started doing fraud. And I thought, oh, I'll just do this for a little bit. I need the money. Once I get $5,000, I'll stop doing it. Got $5,000, couldn't stop doing it. I thought, oh no, I need to get an offer. Because forgetting the fact, this is the thing about the disease. It's like when I use drugs, I could never get enough drugs. There was never enough there. Even when there was enough, I was in India. I was fucking sitting on fucking. I remember sitting on quarter kilos and half kilos of heroin, and still thinking, fucking, that's going to go. That'll be gone soon. Do you know what I mean? It's like fucking nuts. What am I going to do when that runs out? You know, like, fucking hell, what? You know, and it's the same principle applies in recovery. It's like, when I get money, it can be anything, you name it, I can fucking abuse it in recovery. If it's money, if it's sex, if it's going to the gym, obsessing about the gym, about my body and how big I am, if it's shopping, spending money that I've no got, and just thinking, oh, well, we'll just worry about it later on. Whatever it is I'm trying to take, it can't be filled. I can't fill that void with material stuff. And that's where I came unstuck back then. I somehow had lost focus. And what was really difficult was I picked a sponsor, right? This is annoying. I picked a sponsor who would collude with me because he was doing more or less the same thing. So he couldn't really say. So I formally walked through the steps, right? So I went and done the lip service, but I never actually changed. I wasn't actually changing because all things, you've got to be changing. You've got to. There's no, I can sit here and go, oh, please have these defects removed. I really want these defects removed. But if I don't physically put in the fucking legwork, then it's pointless because God's not going to, it's about me putting in action. It's about me going into a partnership with God and going, right, I'm going to do this 50-50. I'm going to put in the graft to do this. I wasn't doing that. I was just like, oh, can you remove these defects? I don't want these removed, but I'm still into the money, and I'm still into the lost one was a big one at that time too. I'm still into these ones. So what happened was I found myself in a situation, and it was that, where it was like a rude awakening, man. I was in Snow Hill Police Station, fraud centre, city, 5 years clean, like that, you know, getting charged with this thing, right? Now, what's fucking nuts about it, right, is at the same time, I was a manager of a drug service just up the road, right, in Camden, but it was working in police stations, so I was in the police stations, speaking to the police and the fucking everybody, you know, the probation and blah, 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 and giving them you know, programs, telling them, doing training about drugs and all sorts of stuff. And then at the same time, I'm committing fraud in our part of London. And when I got arrested, I thought, thank God I'm in Snowhill, not fucking Camden, there is nothing, because I'd be so unstuck. But anyway, the long and short of it was, at the same time as that, I had a partner who I met, this partner who was also a solicitor. This is mad, but she was a solicitor, and she said to me, and she was pregnant because I've got two children now, two beautiful young children, and which is a fucking amazing gift in recovery. Amazing. So she said to me, you have to choose, Mark, between your addiction, because this is just your addiction, your addictive process, or me and the child, and make that decision. And even then, I was like, you know how slippery this fucking is. I was going, I will stop doing the big bits, but can I do these little, you know, these little, because I'm financially insecure, I'm frightened, because I don't, at that time, didn't have the trust that God will look after things. The whole thing about the program is trusting God, clearing house and helping others. I didn't have that concept. I was like, so she really helped me with that. And then, you know, I came through that whole situation. I came out of City Mags courts. I got a not guilt. I got an absolute discharge, right? Which is like amazing. I wasn't even on my record. And I was guilty as they come. Believe me, guilty as they come. And then what happened was, when I came out, I thought, you know what? I am so not going to do this stuff anymore. This is like I'm. And since that time, I've been squeaky clean. But I went on in recovery and I had my partner. I met my partner. Well, I had a partner at that time, and I had two children. This is something that I've noticed about me and about how I pick. I think it's glorious the way I picked fucking partners. Really, I wanted a civilian. At the time, I wanted somebody who's not an addict, right? Because I'd been out with an addict before, and I thought, this next relationship, I want to have somebody who's not got the disease, and somebody who's, and what happens anyway is, and it is that thing, water seeks its own level, man. I attract the same energy as what I've got. I can't really escape it, because I'm walking around with me, and I do, and unconsciously I'll pick people who reflect. This is just for me. I don't know what anybody else, but and I pick somebody who would mirror my father, right, and fucking attributes of my mother as well. So I had this relationship with this lady, and I still love her really, really dearly, and I've got two children with her, and I've only 6 months ago I've split up from her, and I feel still really, really sad about, you know, about sort of the relationship, really. But she taught me a lot of stuff, man. And the thing is, because I've got the two children, I know that I'm always going to be, we're always going to see each other. So it's difficult. Whereas with any other relationship, I could just separate myself and just move on and do. I continually see this partner of mine's, and so every time I see her, a part of me goes like, I'll be lying on the bed, my kids will be like lying beside me or something, and she'll come in, and I'll just go like, oh man, this is what I fucking really want. I want to be part of that wee unit. It's really safe and thing. But yet, when I'm actually in it. And this is what I fucking found in recovery. See, when I'm in relationships, man, it's such hard graft. Do you know what, like, because this is me. I've got a lot of insecurities. So years ago, I mean, I've got a lot better with all the jealousy stuff and all that. But I remember when I first got clean, first couple of years, I remember going out with this girl in Ireland, and I had a fucking nightmare. I was at the court convention. I'll never forget it. And she had two male friends, right? And both of these one of the male friends was 13 years, and I'm only 14 years clean. And she was like two, and I was like two. And I was in this hotel, and she said to me, do you mind if Barney and Tommy, their names were, but do you mind if Barney and Tommy, they can't get a hotel room, can they share with us? And And I people pleasing like mad. So I says, no, of course not. Because also I'm frightened of being rejected and abandoned and all that stuff. So I say, yeah, no, I don't mind. But inside I'm furious. I'm fucking raging. Anyway, so we get up to the room. And Barney, they're quite well. They're 12 years doing their... They're like really flexible and no... So I'm like rigid, man. First couple of years in recovery, I'm rigid. I used to come into meetings so judgmental. Oh, he's not doing his program right. He's not doing his program right. You know that fucking arrogance. So they're like really flexible and rigid and they know each other and they're having a banter. And Barney, there's a glass partition, right? Fucking, there's a glass... sort of thick glass that you can see the hallway, and Barney makes this joke to Geraldine, my partner at the time, goes, oh, later on, we'll have a wee, like that, right, fucking as if they're going to be shagging her, right? I was horrified. I was sitting there like that. I couldn't believe what he'd done, but he was having a joke, right, and she seemed fine with it as well, and a part of me, whether or not, I'm not saying, I don't know if she was fine with having the act, But anyway, I must ask her something. But what happened was, internally, right, this is what happened inside. I went into a place where I just thought, oh, this is fucking horrible. This is horrible. I didn't have the courage or the thing to say, actually, I don't agree. You know, because I was frightened, because they were all laughing about it. So I was thinking, you look like a real... idiot, because they're all joking about it. So I didn't have the courage to say, well, actually, I don't like you saying that to my girlfriend or whatever. So I sat with it, I let it. So you know, it's like resentment, isn't it? You just fucking, you know, I'm drinking. Aye, right. Okay. So anyway, for three nights, right? The convention was, that was a Friday night. That whole night, man, I never slept. Fucking, can you imagine? All fucking night, my brain was going. He'd done it like that, and what he said, and what was her face like when he said it? What did she look happy about it? You know, like the fucking addict, man. Did she look? Oh, what was it? How did she say it? And what did it? You know, and I went through it and through it and through it. I must have went through it, and it was driving me. You know, like you might. I've heard once this guy said, he says, you know, if you could take your meeting off, if you could swap your mind, if you could come into a meeting, you could swap. Yeah, if your head's really fucked, if you could swap with somebody else, believe me, you'd be glad to get your own head back at the end of the meeting, man. You know, because we all appear well, but believe me, we're fucking not. And this is what was going on. And what happened is, 3 days, man, it was a nightmare. And the end of it was, she said to me, we're at the countdown thing, right? And we're waiting for the speaker to come on. And what happened is she turned around and she said, you're going up to the coffee bar. Can you get Tommy a coffee while you're there? As I was walking up to get myself a coffee, I was thinking, spitting his coffee, dirty. In fact, even worse than that. But I'm not getting it. And that's what was in my head. But this is the disease. This is how fucking slippery and cunning it is. He's saying, fuck them. Just leave the convention. Leave Narcotics Anonymous, man. Just leave. They're all a bunch of bastards, you know. Just get out of here. What I was trying to say, the six and seven is really, really important. They call it the forbidden steps. I just want to finish on this. Why I have this bandana, and this reflects really about recovery. I recently went to the Grand Canyon, right? And I was, I'm really into the shaman stuff and all that. And anyway, I went down to a village called Havasupia. And I got blessed and all that by the raven's feather and all that fucking tribal stuff. Anyway, really into it. I'm nuts, right? I'm 12 miles. I'm on my own. I've walked in the canyon 12 miles, slept beside these waterfalls overnight without a soft thing, sleeping there. And then I start worrying about snakes and fucking stuff. You know, like I'm down there already. Anyway, I've came back up and in the Grand Canyon, there's no fucking signs. It's not like getting lost in Camden or something. You know, like other signs that way to Westminster. So I'm walking back up, and I'm on the way down. I'd been following the horse poo, right? The Indians had all come down the horse. So as I was walking up, I'd taken this valley, and it was the wrong valley. And I'm walking up, and I can't see any horse poo. But my obsessive nature is going, just keep fucking walking, because you've got a plane to catch tonight. You've got a short deadline. You've got and I had a plane from Phoenix at 6 o'clock. You've only got so many hours to get this plane. And you've already walked 3 miles, and it was bizarre. The self-will, you know, like, just keep walking. And as I was walking, I could feel at the same time the fear, man. Do you know, like, here's the back of my neck, because I was thinking, this is so dodgy, man, because you've only got so much water. People die. I mean, I never seen any bald eagles or anything like that, but I'd imagine they're there just waiting for you to collapse and fucking eat your bits, man. I seen this on the way up the path, and I thought, oh, somebody's been here before, so let's crack on. And anyway, I got a picture of in my mind's eye, my son and my daughter came into my head, and my son, and I just this real picture of him as a little boy, and I got this feeling like I couldn't bear it, man, never to see him again. I could not bear it. It was like, I just thought if he doesn't know what's happened to me, or he doesn't know where I am, and I'm fucking, you know, like, nobody knew where I was, not even my ex-partner at the time. And so I went, and what came into my head was, go back the way you came from, because you came from the village. If you just go back, you'll find your way. So I went back, I started walking back, and I seen a sign, there was a sign, and I seen, there was only two pathways, and I took the right pathway. And then this guy came down the horse, it was bizarre, and he gave me another big bottle of water. I got fucking trekked for miles, got up to the top of the canyon, and I seen an Indian woman, and she said, I said to her, God, I nearly got lost down there. I took the wrong fucking path. I went, you know, and she said, she says, yeah, lots of people do that, and they don't, and we lose them, because that pathway goes nowhere. That's like 14 miles, the wrong direction, man. There's not, but the Indians go up there every 6 months to migrate, and that's it, you'll not get. But the moral of the story is that when I listened to my head, that what happened in that process was, it was step three. It was like, I was my son's image and my higher power. I believe my God is went, there's your son, this is the image of your son, or whatever happened. And I went, right, go back. You can crash out in the village at night, man, and get the helicopter out in the morning. Fuck the flight. £400, £500 I was worried about a flight. It's nuts. It's like, I've always got this disease, and I've got the program, and it's about living, trying to live as best I can with the program to combat the negative aspects, to minimise the negative aspects of my disease on a daily basis. And with that, I hope you got something. Thank you. Bye.